Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, episode number 66. I'm really excited about this week's episode and next week's episode, both around the topic of the landlord and shared workspace operator relationship, what that looks like, how it's evolving. I won't go into too many details, but this week I talked to Ryan Hoops, who co-founded Colliers International's Flexible Workspace Advisory Practice. He's met with hundreds of operators and landlords and just has a great perspective on what's happening in the marketplace, which he shares on this episode. And then next week, I air the episode where I talk with Nick Clark, who is the founder of The Common Desk in the Dallas area, and he did his first two locations on traditional leases and then did an agreement with a developer, Granite Properties, and they did a 30,000-foot location in Plano, Texas, and he talks about that relationship and what that looks like and sort of how he's looking at the landlord ecosystem. So both really great interviews. Before we dive in, I just want to mention two things. One, if you're starting a co-working space, I'm launching a new program called the Coworking Startup School to help you get what you need from A to Z to start a space, both from a resources perspective and knowledge perspective, and from a give you a group to get through each month with and help you through the challenging mindset times. So if you're interested in that type of support while you go through your journey, check out www.coworkingstartupschool.com for the details. And then one other thing, I just started a Facebook group for our listeners, because unless you're already in a flight group or have emailed me to let me know that you're a listener, I have no idea who you are. You're just a lonely download statistic in Libsyn. So I would love to connect with the folks that listen to the podcast. So I just created a Facebook group and you can pop in, and it's designed to share experiences, resources. I've already put one resource in there on the 10-step SEO quick start guide. So if you already have a space or are working on one, definitely go grab it and make sure you've done these 10 things so that you can have a solid relationship with Google. So you can find that at www.everythingcoworkingclub.com. We'll send you over to that Facebook group. Again, that's www.everythingcoworkingclub.com. Okay, now we'll dive into this week's episode.
I'm super excited to be here today with Ryan Hoops. Ryan, that's a great last name, by the way.
Thank you.
So Ryan is based in Dallas. He's a senior associate at real estate services firm Colliers International, and he co-founded and heads the firm's Global Flexible Workspace Advisory Practice. And he and I were just kind of chatting about his background and how he came to that specialization. And we said we should hit the record button so that everybody can listen. So Ryan, thanks for joining us today. Looking forward to our conversation. And to kick off, tell everyone a little bit about your background and then how you came to focus on co-working.
Absolutely. Jamie, thanks for connecting here today, and very excited to talk about this subject that's, you know, seeming to be on the headlines of all the major real estate publications these days. I'll go back about 3 years ago. Our practice based here in Dallas was traditionally focused and had an expertise in corporate services office tenant representation. So what that means is our clients are Fortune 1000 companies with 200-400 offices across the country, and we were representing them in their corporate real estate strategy with their leases and acquisitions of that real estate. So our background essentially is office tenant rep, and then we, through them, started recognizing the explosive growth of, you know, what everyone likes to call co-working. And, you know, co-working has kind of become so many different things over the past 3 years. But either way, just really on behalf of our corporate clients, we started taking a look into it, and then we realized that, you know, this is something that's really going to change and disrupt the industry as a whole. So we built the practice. We incorporated professionals from all over North America to start, and we decided to focus on three pillars. The first pillar is, you know, we want to know and have relationships with all of the operators in the business. So we have, over the course of 3 years, met with, vetted, and started relationships with over 100 different operators in North America with the idea of working with a select group of them to expand, right? So an operator can be a co-working operator, a traditional executive suite operator, or an accelerator or an incubator. But, you know, from there, we grew into our two additional pillars. The second pillar being, just by nature what we do, we educate landlords on a continual basis on why it's important for them to incorporate flexible workspace into their portfolio as an owner. So that could be local, regional, or institutional landlords. We've done a lot of education building relationships with them. And then the third pillar goes back to what really our original focus is. We consult some of the largest corporate users of space on how to utilize flexible workspace within their real estate strategy as a tenant. So if you think about the Silicon Valley banks of the world, you know, that are wanting to put their offices into these flex workspace solutions when they're entering a market or they're looking to grow within a market. So those are the three pillars of our practice and our background.
Yeah, I mean, those three pillars put you, I mean, really just right at the center of the activity of what's happening in the industry. I kind of envy, you know, the access you have to kind of that picture. And that's part of what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah. And that's what unique about our position in the industry on the real estate brokerage services side of it is that we can speak with all these different groups and, you know, build those relationships where a single operator, or a single landlord, or a single corporate Fortune 1000, you know, can't have the access to the relationships that we can.
Yep. Well, and to help each party see what's happening in the marketplace and understand from their perspective, right, what's important and what they need to know. Because, like, operators, you know, really want corporate users to understand how to participate in the shared workspace marketplace, but right, don't have those relationships to go do it themselves. And so at Colliers, and I just realized, I don't mean to be playing favorites, but I actually interviewed episode 58, Peter Black, who's in Australia with Colliers. And he talking about, right, the role that Colliers is playing. And, you know, the theme of the podcast was helping corporate real estate executives understand that, you know, flexibility needs to be a core piece of their mentality. It doesn't mean it needs to be the only thing they do, but they really need to think about, you know, how that positions. And I, you know, I had a lot of great feedback on that podcast. And I think it's partly because operators are so, you know, waiting for that tipping point to happen. And it's folks like you who can help, can educate also on the landlord side. You know, we're seeing operators that are interested in doing management and operating agreements, which we're going to talk about today, but operators don't necessarily have those relationships. And so, you know, how does that fit? And I'd love to, you know, one of my questions at the end is sort of, how do you, you know, how does your role play in that? But we'll wait.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, the impetus, so you and I have kind of kept in touch over the years, and you, right, you're a thought leader in the space and you have this unique perspective. And I happen to see, and I'll link to it in the show notes, Brian was interviewed for National Real Estate Online article recently, kind of talking about what's happening in co-working and flexible office and, you know, in the landlord piece starting to really play a bigger part. And one of the things Ryan said was the next big push will be the marriage between landlords and co-working operators. And so I, you know, sent Ryan a note and said, let's talk about this. So Ryan, I'd love to get your perspective. So let's start with the landlord side. So how do landlords that, you know, want to add flexible space, and I know certainly there's, you know, a segment of landlords that are totally getting this and then some that are still kind of learning and seeing what's happening in the space. But for those who are seeing it, how do they think through, you know, how to go about this, you know, in terms of doing it themselves or looking for a partner?
Right. It's a great question. So I'll kind of tell you where it traditionally has fallen. And in the beginning, you know, and I'll call the beginning 3 years ago, which it obviously is not the real beginning, but you know, when this really started to disrupt the industry, in the beginning, the landlords wanted to focus on how they could do this on their own, how they could launch a co-working program or flex workspace program within their portfolio on their own. And that led to, you know, really what I would say is kind of a lot of failed starts. You know, it essentially transformed into these landlords realizing that, you know, not only can they generally not operate a center on their own, but it's not their business. It's not their core focus. But frankly, they don't want to. You know, they've realized that they need to bring in experts that understand how to curate these types of environments and how to drive sales with that specific type of a product. So I'll tell you, the landlord and the co-working operators' goals are becoming more and more aligned as we move forward, understanding that the co-working operator wants a landlord that's committing to building a vibrant, you know, live, work, play asset with all these amenities, because that's what helps them drive their business. And the landlord wants the co-working piece of it to be a big part of that.
Yeah.
So it's growing less adversarial and more partner oriented, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Is there a profile of a landlord that will still do it themselves and try to create their own brand? Or do you think most of it is going to go the way of partnerships?
No, there definitely is a profile. Whenever we enter a market with one of our clients, we want to identify who the big landlord players are. And again, you know, not to be giving away too much of our secret sauce,
yeah.
But, you know, we identify all the landlords in the market. And then, you know, we've been doing this for 3 years now. We know who we want to talk to. You want to look for, you know, generally regional players or local players that have deep private family pocketbooks, perhaps, is one example. But, you know, institutional money, it's very difficult for these institutional landlords to kind of get their mind wrapped around it and to move as quickly as a growing co-working operator wants to.
Yeah.
Not to say that they're not. Obviously,
yeah.
There are two great examples in the press recently with Hines and the EOP, but, you know, they're a lot more difficult to, I guess, move as fast as a co-working operator wants to move. So we focus on local and regional landlords whenever we're looking to break into a market that are either repositioning an asset, you know, putting a lot of money into renovating and redoing the amenity spaces, maybe looking at a spec suite program, or brand new developments. So, you know, ground up developments, you know, those are the situations where you're likely going to have landlords that are able to be a little bit riskier with the money that they invest into the building.
Yeah, make some of those decisions. I mean, Granite Properties, and I don't think you worked on that, but in Dallas is, in, you know, probably a good example of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, we've looked at several of their projects. In fact, I'm meeting with Granite tomorrow morning to talk about one of their projects and a client that we're representing right now, potentially marrying them up. But either way, they fit that profile.
Yeah. So for those that are looking to partner like a Granite, and even, you know, Hines and Equity Office put out RFPs recently, which surprised me. I saw that and I was like, oh, wow, this is interesting. I didn't find the RFP anywhere. I would love to have seen it. Sense of kind of what's on that RFP and what's on their criteria list. I mean, for sure, I mean, mine would be, you know, has operated in multiple markets. This is not their first space that they're doing. They've established, you know, business processes. But yeah, what are you seeing on that side?
Absolutely. So I have not seen that RFP either. it is not, I don't know how limited it really was, but either way, I can tell you about, you know, we're actually beginning to help landlords put together RFPs for certain assets across the country and helping advise these landlords on, you know, what they need to be looking for. So I'll tell you just in general what a landlord is going to be interested in. They're going to want to see an operating history. They're absolutely going to want to tour your existing locations. You know, they're looking for a co-working operator that can come in and drive sales to their space. And one of the chief things that they normally ask is, you know, what are your existing corporate relationships that you could potentially activate in this particular market? You know, what would be your marketing plan? That's another thing that they want to look at as well. Generally, in this situation is, you know, what is your marketing plan for whenever you enter a new market? What is your hiring plan for the people that you are actually going to bring in to run the space, sell the product? You know, really diving into the business plan as a whole. You know, most of these landlords, especially Hines, especially EOP, and most of the other landlords that we're working with, by the time they're at that point, they understand that there are very few players in the co-working industry that are what you would even term as, you know, capitalized. You know, they're all outside of Regis, and, you know, we work with the war chest that they have, you know, in office landlord's mind, high risk, low credit tenants.
right?
So whoever is, whichever landlord is looking to do this, understands that, can get past that in their mind. In fact, that's one of the biggest things that we do is we identify very quickly, okay, is this landlord, you know, do they get it, quote unquote?
Yeah.
Because if they don't, then we can't waste our time.
We're really stuck. If they can't get past the, because to your point, so many operators are not, which I think is such an interesting time in our industry, because there's starting to be this opportunity with landlords, but there are so few operators that sort of qualify at this point. So
absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, my view is kind of, that's why I like to ask, because I think operators are really interested in this opportunity, but you really have to start positioning yourself now to kind of get to that point. I think they have to have the mindset of kind of that big picture thinking. So they have to have the operations in place, but also that piece that you mentioned that landlords are looking for, like, what is your CRM? And not just from, you know, the
space. Exactly.
Yeah, thinking like, how do you bring value to his effort to market his asset or his portfolio, his or her, of course. Right. And the marketing piece, how are you attracting people to a property, not just sort of at a real micro level, but at a more macro level? And, you know, Nick Clark used this phrase when he was talking about the relationship with Granite and kind of how they think about things as headquarters as a service. Like, how do you think about yourself fitting into the bigger picture of that asset and partnering with a landlord to, like, you know, basically have synergy and make a bigger, you add more value than just sort of, you know, the flexible space that you're bringing to the property.
Right, right. And, you know, that goes back to what I was saying. Their goals are becoming more and more aligned. The operator and the landlord's goals are becoming more and more aligned, or at least that alignment is more and more prevalent.
Yeah.
It's always kind of been there, but it's now more prevalent, you know, especially as you have landlords starting to understand it. Another thing that I didn't mention was, you know, we even have been asked by landlords to have our clients outline their billing and payment structure for their members.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah. Just, yeah, totally makes sense. So in terms of operators that you were, so you're trying to matchmake, which to some extent, which can be, I would guess, sort of a little bit challenging. How do you, you know, what's your advice for operators that want to position themselves to be a good partner for an operator, kind of in addition to what we've been talking about? Like, if you were going to kind of groom somebody that you think is high potential, what advice would you give them?
To become experts in the hospitality and the sales part of your business, because, you know, being able to demonstrate that you can curate these environments and run these operations and drive sales to your center. I mean, that's the biggest step that these landlords are going to be looking for.
Yeah.
At least in our experience.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. I think, right, there's a fine balance between the community piece and sort of the marketing. Like, you create community in order to drive people to the experience and to the space, but your operations and your marketing engine have to really support that.
Right. And if you have an operator that's breaking into a market that they've never been before, you know, it's marketing strategies are going to differ and are going to be different, but not that much different.
Yeah.
You know, it's still, you're still providing a low barrier to entry solution for people that want to get office space in a high barrier to entry environment, like traditional office space.
Yeah. But you can't have filled your space based on sort of relationships in a specific community. You need to have systems in place and processes that work to bring people into that environment so that it can translate into another market.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And a lot of our clients, we're working, you know, on the premise that, look, this landlord is our partner and they're going to help launch some of those relationships locally as well. You know, that's landlord 2.0, right? That's,
yeah.
You know, fine. The landlord wants co-working. They're open to it. They're willing to invest in the space to make it happen, you know, but is this landlord also willing to open up their relationships in order to help make sure that this center can be successful?
Yeah.
You know, just further breaking down that kind of adversarial lessor lessee relationship into more of a partner.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, we're working on a project right now where we're literally, the landlord is going to jointly help craft enterprise marketing solution, as well as driving interest in potential new members to come in and rent space from the co-working operation. So, you know, that's what we're looking for in a landlord.
Yeah. So to your point, right, there are kind of key things that they need to really get to for that to work. In terms of sort of structures for these relationships, just, you know, at a high level, what can these look like in terms of like a management or operating agreement?
Yeah. Yeah. I'll give you the broad stroke high summary of it. So in almost every operating agreement, management agreement, you know, you're going to have the operating expenses, the operator's operating expenses covered in revenue, right? So the revenue comes in and it's first going to cover the operating expenses. Now, whether there's some kind of a minimum rent or base rent included in that or not, you know, it's still the same kind of formula. There's a level of operating expenses that gets covered by the revenue first. Yeah. Then everything on top of that, the NOI, the net operating income gets split in a certain percentage between the landlord and the operator. Sometimes we'll have situations where the landlord will receive 100% of that until they pay back their investment for building out the space, or, you know, whatever their initial upfront investment might be.
And which I think can be negotiable as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And we've even had a client, you know, go from looking at a deal where, okay, the landlord's literally putting up everything, we're not putting anything into this, but that means that we're going to have to give a much higher percentage of the NOI, net operating income, to the landlord. Whereas, okay, well, what if we go ahead and we invest $250,000 into the project? And I'm not talking about marketing and operations overhead. I'm talking about, you know, inside of the build out or FF&E, you know, whatever kind of the deal costs are. You know, if we invest in that and then push the upper limit of our percentage split on the back end, landlords, you know, each one of these deals are a snowflake. You know, every landlord's different. Yeah. You know, it's just going to depend on the deal and the market. But that's the basic framework for the type of operating agreements that we're working with.
People ask all the time, and I'm like, oh man, it so depends on, right, those little details at the end, you know, and it can depend on the landlord situation, right? Like, right, are they redeveloping the space anyway? And so are construction costs, you know, sort of budgeted in, and so they're a little more flexible on what their return looks like, or...
It goes all the way down to even negotiating a termination agreement. You know, if the landlord has a 90-day out where they can kick you out in 90 days, you know, that's something that can be mitigated, right? You know, because the idea is to have these locations at least locked up or the option for them long term. You know, it's very much a retail use. But some operators choose to be more high risk in that, you know, they're like, fine, you know, we'll take a mutual termination clause or a one-sided termination clause, and, you know, they're fine walking away. But generally, our clients want to lock up a location and an agreement for a minimum of 10 years.
Right. Back to the incentives. Nobody wants to be switching, you know, operators all the time, because that's not good for anybody. So incentives would be that everybody stays in place and everything, you know, goes gangbusters and everything works out as planned. Nobody wants to be switching that up just to, yeah. And in terms of risk, I mean, I think that's the other, you know, sort of big piece to the story for the operator is like, look, this arrangement is for an operator that wants to extend a brand, extend their operational expertise with lower risk. Because, I mean, essentially, you're, you know, when you sign a lease, you're arbitraging space. And if you're, you know, if you don't want to take that risk that rent's going to continue to go up and your margins will be eroded and you want to, you know, partner and also just be a part of something bigger. I think that's kind of the part of the excitement of partnering with a landlord is you can make such a bigger impact on that asset than just leasing a space and getting into it. But your margins, you know, you have to do more of those. You're going to have a lower margin business on a per unit basis if you're doing an operating agreement versus if you're taking on all the risk and doing the lease and the FF&E and the build out and all that.
Right. Absolutely.
So in terms of kind of where the market is going, I always get questions, you know, who's doing this, you know, who's doing operating agreements? And there are not, so I know of some, you probably know of more. I don't think it's a really high number. I mean, you know, what percentage would you say of that is happening today as part of the sort of flexible office marketplace? And where do you think that'll go in the next 5 to 10 years?
Right. Well, let me put it this way. If there was a high percentage of landlords out there doing this right now, you know, I get inquiries and requests from co-working operators all across the country that want to engage us to go find them management and operating agreements. And, you know, frankly, unless they are someone that we think has a high probability of allowing us to sell a landlord on the idea, which is really what we have to do, then we have to politely decline the opportunity, because there are so few landlords out there that are just doing operating agreements. Yeah. Now, if you had to put a percentage on it, I mean, I would guess a very, very small percentage, single digits, yeah. easily, in terms of the number of landlords that are doing operating agreements or management agreements right now. Now, I will say this, we have run into plenty of situations where we're in a market and we have a landlord that, you know, all of a sudden says, okay, all right, I'm open to an operating agreement or management agreement as opposed to a traditional lease. You know, what would that look like? And we work through it with them. And then all of a sudden, all the other buildings and landlords that we've kind of brought into this competitive environment for our client, you know, it's a herd mentality. They're all saying, okay, well, what would that look like? Yeah. You know, so we've gotten landlords to finally get past the idea of doing a traditional lease and move to an operating agreement. But it's a lot of work and a lot of time. And, you know, frankly, I don't know if an operator doing it on their own, if they have aggressive growth plans that they can do it without outsourcing to commercial real estate services group, you know, especially one that understands the market, for example, like our team does, whether here in Europe or Asia, because it does take so much time and such a high focus on it. And these operators, frankly, have to run their business.
Right, right. You know? And I think to your point, I mean, especially today, from what I hear, right, these relationships just, I mean, could take a year to get. I mean, you know, signing a lease can take a long time too, but getting, you know, those relationships down. And I would say too, I mean, my guess is most operators would be doing sort of a hybrid expansion strategy, because it can take a long time to, you know, to do an operation.
Right. Well, they're still going out there and doing leases.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that is definitely still happening. You know, in fact, there are situations where a lease is a better situation than a management or an operating agreement, because it does bring a level of security to your real estate deal that, you know, may or may not be there with the management or an operating agreement. And in that situation, you're looking to mitigate your upfront cost for securitization with that security deposit letter, credit, personal guarantee. You know, we mitigate that down to a very, very small number based on two merits. One, you know, this is where the industry is going, Mr. Landlord. And two, you know, our client is the right operator, the right brand, and the right group for what you want to do with this asset. And you have to invest in them, and you have to invest in their business by, you know, minimizing the securitization as much as possible.
Are there types of markets that are more friendly to land? And again, I know the number of these getting done is small, but like the opportunity to get a landlord to do an operating agreement and to see the opportunity, is it market-based, like in a market where there's higher commercial real estate vacancy, or is it really the profile of the landlord?
You know, it's really interesting. It's going to come down to the profile of the landlord. That's the big realization that we've had in the last 3 years, that, you know, market to market, you know, I'll just go ahead and give an example here. You know, Houston, you would think that Houston would be a very aggressive market with how they've taken a hit with oil and gas recently and the vacancy. But I mean, you're talking about landlords that have owned office real estate for 100 years. I mean, that is such a high barrier to entry market in terms of office. Phoenix is another example, you know, but Phoenix is doing very well right now. But, you know, again, the real estate community, it's a high barrier to entry market, you know, with landlords that, you know, aren't doing this because frankly, none of the other landlords are doing it.
Yeah.
But there are other markets like for example, LA, where, you know, it's a really big market. You've got some very forward thinking landlords that, you know, finding the right relationship there is probably going to be easier. But I would say it's based on the landlord. It's not so much based on the market. In fact, most of the work that we do with landlords are, you know, saying we're interested in market A, B, and C, D, and E to bring in an operator, you know, understanding that the structure of the deal is going to be relatively the same.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Although, so follow up to that, as a broker, how do you fit into the management agreement scenario? Because that's not a traditional lease structure for you. How did you?
Yeah.
play in that situation?
Well, our team brings credibility to the operator in a way that's unique. We've had an opportunity to meet with and understand the businesses or the business plans and the operations of pretty much every player in this space. And if we're taking a client to a market, it's because we've done, you know, a significant amount of our own vetting.
Yeah.
We can stay on that pedestal to begin with, but it goes back to what I said earlier. You know, going a principle for a co-working space, going into a market themselves to try and uncover these opportunities, you know, they are going to spend an inordinate amount of time trying to uncover an opportunity.
Yeah.
So if they can outsource it to a real estate services group or team like ours, then, you know, that frees up a lot of their time. But there are certain checks that we have to go through with the operator to ensure that it's the right group that we want to work with and partner
right.
with. Not to sound, you know.
No, to your point, there are so few deals getting to have a profile
yeah,
that will be successful.
When I have one of the largest office owners in the country asking me, hey, who do we need to work with
yeah.
in the greater Boston area? We're going to have to put the right operators in front of them.
Yeah.
You know, or else we lose credibility with the landlord. So it's a growing and evolving situation. You know, I will say it is 100% nowhere near a traditional brokerage representation situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in fact, I would caution most tenant reps out there that, you know, if you are going to be working with a co-working operator, trying to grow them or do a deal in a traditional way, it's very likely not going to work. You need a team that understands the industry and understands how to craft creative deals.
Right. I mean, I've even just seen brokers letting, you know, clients sign leases where their startup costs are not going to be paid back before the lease is over. You know,
right.
just make it
right.
a different business model. And so you really, I mean, just at a basic level, not to, you know, get into the higher level, sort of more advanced relationships that you're working on. So I
right.
always advise people, and I have podcast episodes on that. You need to go with brokers who get the business because it can make or break your experience and your business.
Yeah. I think as we move forward, you know, in the next 5-10 years, the situation is going to soften up tremendously. You're going to see a lot more landlords doing these types of deals, these type of operating and agreement management deals with co-working operators. You know, that percentage is going to go up to, I would say, 30, 40, maybe 50% of the deals
wow.
that are getting done out there. Because again, the landlord community, it's a herd mentality. You
yeah.
know, once you have
yeah.
one big group doing it, like a Hines or EOP, you know, then the others are going to start getting their minds wrapped around it. And then you'll see much more commitment from the real estate brokerages, from the real estate brokerage side of the community to making this happen. But, you know, frankly, it's just not there yet. You know, so you've just got a handful of groups in the world really that are focusing on it. And we're proud and happy to be on the front end of that.
Yeah. And we were talking before the call started, you work certainly nationally and then you have teams internationally. We were talking about the growth in
mm-hmm.
Asia. You said, you know, you're really excited about the team that you have in Asia. So for folks looking for a good relationship, you're covered in terms of the marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a strong team in APAC and then we just onboarded in London for that essentially serve as the quarterback for Europe. It's real exciting. We get together we get together on calls about once every quarter or so, and you know, but that's just starting as well. So it's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun.
So thank you for sharing your perspective. I think this has been really interesting. I've certainly learned some things as well. If someone
right.
In you know, getting in touch with you, feels like they're a good candidate for expansion, looking for somebody to help them, you know, get into other markets, what's a good way to find you?
Call or email, you know, no matter where they are, I'll be happy to talk to them. You know, and it's not just me either. I've got several other principals and co-founders that, you know, are all here that be happy to have at least an introductory discussion with an operator. And then, you know, impart some of our understanding of the market and where we think they would want to go with, you know, no strings attached. But yeah, just call or an email. We'd love to talk to you.
Perfect. And I'll put your phone and email address in the show notes. Email is ryan.hoopes@colliers.com. But like I said, I'll throw in the show notes for anybody who's driving or walking the dog. But Ryan, thank you so
Great.
Much. Yeah. That's how I'm always doing when I listen to my podcast. Yeah. I mean, thanks for taking the time for this. You have a really unique perspective on what's happening in terms of the landlord, you know, sort of operator piece. And at some point, we should do another episode on the corporate piece, because I'm sure you have lots of interesting insights to share about where that's
going. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Really appreciate your time and your commitment. I mean, like I said, you're one of the you know, the first people to really say, look, we're going to put some resources against this and become experts. And I think, you know, that's invaluable as this time in the industry as we're growing. So thanks for your commitment to the industry as well.
Thank you so much. And excited to talk to you anytime, and great work on your end, and look forward to keep working together.
Awesome. Till next time.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Everything Coworking. Be sure to click the subscribe button so you can stay up to date on the latest trends and how-tos. Until next time.